Hello, and welcome back to another episode of The Vinyl Countdown, the podcast where I, Jeremy Levine, break down my favorite vinyl releases from cover to cover and everything in between. On this week's episode, I'm back from my October Spooktacular, where I was covering horror movies and horror scores and all that good stuff, and jumping right back into the more routine, I decided to do an album that is near and dear to my heart, and one that I've been jamming pretty much nonstop for the past, I don't know, 12 years. Set Your Goals with their second album, This Will Be the Death of Us. And I had the pleasure of sitting down with lead co-vocalist Matt Wilson of Set Your Goals. It was really neat getting someone who worked on it and who helped to write and create this wonderful album, sit down and take the time out of the busy day to talk to me about said album. So, it was a lot of fun, and I hope that you all enjoy that. But before we get into the album as usual, let's get on down to Variant Corner. So it's a pretty quick one this week. There are only three pressings, all in 2009 when the record was released. And there's a black pressing that was limited to 1,200. White, which is the one that I have, that was limited to 800. And then that was an Epitaph store exclusive. And finally, a tour exclusive Blue Translucent, limited to only 200. That's actually the one that I wanted, but one came up for sale. A buddy of mine on Instagram was, I want to say, clearing out his whole collection. And this record popped up, the white variant, I think, for, maybe like $50 or something like that, which the Discogs price, the going price is around $50 to $80. So to get it for $50 or $55, whatever it was, you know, I was totally cool with that, because I've been actually trying to get my hands on this record for a very long time, because there have not been any that have popped up on Discogs, eBay. It's just been a really hard record to come across. So when I finally got my hands on one, or got a chance to get my hands on one, I definitely did it. So, you know, it sounds great. The pressing is really good. Not a whole lot to say about it. You know, it's not a gatefold or anything like that, but it is, it's just a great record. Like I said, I was super excited to finally own it on vinyl so that I could do an episode on it and kind of share that with you guys. So that being said, I'm going to get into the interview now, and then I'll be back to finish the show off after. Hope you enjoy. All right, so this is Jeremy Levine from the Vinyl Countdown Podcast. I'm here with Matt Wilson of Set Your Goals. Matt, how are you doing today, man?
Howdy. Good, how are you?
I'm doing good. Just hanging out at the house, you know, kind of enjoying the weekend. So how's your day been? Pretty
bit hectic. Yeah. I'm starting a chocolate bar company with some friends, and we went to go set up a business account for our LLC at a bank. So a lot of paper signing.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
So today, like we discussed previously, we'll be talking about the 2009 release, This Will Be the Death of Us. I know for me and a lot of my friends, it's one of our kind of go-to albums, which in a way I hesitate to call it pop punk, right? It's always dicey trying to really pin down a genre for, I guess, anything really. But some buddies of mine, they actually like to call it, it's pop punk, but it's a lowercase p on the pop and uppercase p on the punk, right? So that okay. I could see that's much better than what I could come up with. But what I'd like to do is get into really the history of the band, I guess, you know, where you guys are from, influences, like when you guys are kind of coming up in the scene, like what were some bands you were kind of looking up to, or people that really kind of got you, you know, wanting to pursue music, or was that something that you guys kind of always wanted to do?
What were some influences? I guess, you know, some of the early stuff that I got into, like hardcore bands, and then also just local hardcore bands in our area, and not hardcore bands, you know, like when I first started going to shows, you know, I was going to like punk shows, and that lasted not super long, probably only a month or two before I found hardcore. So I was quickly enamored with it. But what brought me to the shows in the first place was listening to punk rock and listening to ska. There's a band called Link 80 in my area. And what was really cool about them is they kind of had hardcore breakdowns, but they had like fast punk parts, but they also had horns. So they kind of melded all three. They were a huge influence on me and my, you know, desire to do a band. And what was cool about our area is that so many of the shows were mixed bill. So, you know, you'd have like a ska band with a hardcore band and maybe like an emo band or whatever. So I think that really did it for me.
So have you been really excited about the ska revival over the past couple of years? Kind of been,
I don't know that I'm so excited about it these days as an adult. I don't really listen to much ska. I've got like, you know, the sentimental value for some of those records that I used to listen to, like the first Goldfinger record or No Doubt, Tragic Kingdom or something like that. But
yeah,
I don't listen to a whole lot of ska, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, that's, I think that's more of what it's kind of, it's driving is, what's driving it really is like the nostalgia for it. And people are like, oh shit, it's back. But it's like, should it be though? You know? So with that, so when you guys, like, what year did you guys all get started with Set Your Goals? Was that 2004, 2005? Was like when you guys kind of came together, or was it like before that? I know the first album was 06, right?
Right. Man, I'm really bad with dates and like remembering things in general. I do know that, you know, I guess the question I would respond with a question of what do you define as a band starting, right? Is it when you have a full lineup, or is it when you start writing songs? Because you're not really a band yet at that point. It was just like, you know, in the beginning, the end of 2003, I would say, it was just Jordan and I writing stuff in my garage. And then we got like a full lineup probably early 2004. Then we recorded a demo, and then I want to say we didn't play shows until like maybe late 04.
Okay. So I guess I would sort of define it like when you guys were like a full-fledged band, like at what point were you like, okay, we can do this, you know, full-time, like this can be what we do from here on out, as opposed to like not
making,
I guess,
a full-time job, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, the first few years we basically paid to be on tour. I think it was 06, late 06, maybe early 07 when we took the plunge and we were like, hey, let's try to make this our full-time job. Because we were getting so many offers at that point to tour. We were on tour 10 months out of the year.
Oh, wow.
So we were like, well, we don't really have a choice at this point. You know, in the beginning it was rough because we're on tour all the time. We're not really making money yet, you know, but we still got to pay our bills at home, you know?
So yeah.
There was a lot of couch surfing. You know, some of us lived with our parents, but you know, there were a lot of tours where I would, you know, be home for a month and I would just stay on my brother's couch or, you know, get a random job somewhere and work that for like, you know, a month or two and then go back out on tour and then get a new random job when I'm back. And did that for a couple of years. But yeah, I don't think it was really sustainable for us to tour full time until around 2007.
Okay.
So, you know, we were already 3 years deep into being a band.
Yeah. And I guess Mutiny had been out for about a year at that time. I guess touring in support of that, it was still, so going into this record in 09, when did that kind of come about? Like 08, I guess it came out in July or so of 09, like mid-year. You guys were kind of conceptualizing that like on the road. I imagine you're doing a lot of writing, just kind of not really in one place, right? You're kind of moving around touring and just trying to write when you could.
Actually, we were pretty incapable of writing on the road. We had to set aside time, and that's why we took so long in the studio. Like our studio sessions were way longer than they needed to be because we weren't prepared, because we could only like focus our efforts into writing if we set aside the time in the studio. We never wrote on the road, really. I mean, Jordan would have like riff ideas and stuff, and he wrote the bulk of the, I guess, skeleton of the songs, musically at least. And yeah, I don't know why, it just never happened on the road.
That's interesting.
We did a little recording on the road.
Oh, did you?
We did that. We pulled that off. But as far as writing, yeah, it was always in the studio. So we would have like month and a half sessions for albums.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So this will be the death of us. You know, my memory is horrible, but I want to say it was at least a month and a half in the studio with Mike Green.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Cause like I said, I hear stories of bands where like we were pumping these records out, like we were writing on the tour bus, like that we wrote four songs after a show one. I know, you know, it's like you hear that kind of a lot.
Awesome.
It's like that seems like crazy to do. Like, you know, you play 20, like a show and then you get off and you're like, okay, let me write two songs like tonight or some shit. You know, this seems like a machine.
Yeah. And I was always envious of bands that could do that because that was really, you know, really cool.
Yeah. So moving into this record, one thing that I noticed about Set Your Goals, like as a band, yeah, I guess in the pop punk world or just in that overall overarching genre, right? a lot of songs, a lot of bands at the time were making songs about, you know, I guess relationships or whatever it might be. It was very, I guess, parodied a lot, you know, the idea of the emo and all that other kind of shit. And with you guys, I always noticed it was much more, there's still songs about relationships. That's always going to be a thing, right? But more so in like social commentary and really having, I guess, a little more substance, right, than most bands in that pop punk world, which, you know, I always wondered, is that something that going into it all, did y'all consciously think, okay, we want to write something that's going to actually like really mean something to us and hopefully, you know, other people as well? Like, was that something I guess you guys looked at and say, yeah, let's really, you know, drive that point home?
Absolutely. It's always been kind of a mission of ours to have a real statement behind our lyrics and some real substance to it. And, you know, there is the personal stuff too, and like, you know, songs about relationships, but I feel like it's kind of got a different vibe with us than like your typical quote unquote pop punk band.
Yeah.
Just because, I don't know, our heads are in different places, I feel. And I attribute that to coming up in the hardcore world where, you know, bands have a lot of kind of soapbox shouting and kind of, you know, a lot of opinions. It's a very opinionated world. And, you know, a lot of those bands in hardcore are really involved in politics. And, you know, I, for lack of a better word, they give a crap, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, a lot of maybe more mainstream sounding stuff is a little more polished and more surface level.
Yeah.
So that's maybe not a priority for the bands like that.
Yeah, I guess in their case, maybe it's more palatable. You know, it's easier to kind of get that out to the masses where it doesn't have to be super deep, and not to disparage those bands. You know, what they do is that's what they do, and it's fine. But, you know, it is always nice to kind of have
a place for that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I feel like with you guys, there is some of that pop sensibility, and there is what I feel at least to be some accessibility, but also, again, with the lyrics to kind of really make it something different and kind of make it unique, you know, which, you know, I guess, speaking of the lyrics, getting into it, the first track on the record is the title track. And so this song, you know, I guess talking about, it seems to me, I always took it as like you guys talking about being on the road, or at least just being in a band and kind of what kept you guys going, I guess, or I may be looking into that wrong. I don't know. But just a lot of like one of the lines, you know, I think, actually, I think you may sing this part where it says, you know, I was ready to let me let go until I heard you shout, until I heard, you know, shouting from you. I'm assuming that's like the crowd, or, you know, metaphorical crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about the lyrics, you know, kind of some insight as to, you know, I guess where that song was born from.
Which song, sorry?
Oh, it's this would be The Death of Us, the title track.
The title track.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
That song was just kind of, we were going through a really troubled time, you know, during that time, because we were in a period of our band's career where we were transitioning labels. We had kind of had enough of Eulogy. We were kind of, our relationship with them was really stressed, and we were looking for a new home. And we knew that if we put out a new label or a new record with Eulogy, we were going to die as a band. It just wasn't going to work because things were so stressed between us and John. And we knew that he was going to set the sort of buyout price to get us out of our contract so ridiculously high that it might be impossible to get bought out by another label.
Oh, wow.
And so that song is about that kind of hopelessness and the feelings that we were feeling at that time. We felt like we didn't have a lot of options, and, you know, we were just in our heads a lot. So that's where those lyrics are kind of coming from. And that's why we named the record "This Will Be the Death of Us." It's like, well, this record or this band could be the death of us, you know, the situation that we're in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's one of the songs, like if I'm going to try to introduce somebody to you guys, like that's one of the ones I put on, is sort of like, hey, here's a really good, you know, there's a lot of fast parts. There's a lot of, yeah, there's a lot here that kind of, I think, encapsulates a lot of the sound of the band. So it's like, that's a fun one to put on for people who maybe have never heard you somehow and say, hey, look at this one. Listen to this one's great. I think another one, this song is definitely not about a girl, is another one I do like to put on for people. I'm like, hey, check this song out, because again, going back to the lyrics and kind of, it's right there in the title too. It's kind of a fun subversion, right, of the whole thing. Like, I always thought that was really funny. But and with the next song, the you know, with the Hoffman Liz's, we will see the truth. I like the They Live sort of now that I say reference is pretty almost verbatim in some parts. I thought it was pretty cool. Which that one, it's been harder to explain that to people only because a lot of my friends somehow haven't seen They Live, so they're just like, what are you talking about? Like,
oh yeah,
have you not ever seen this like 15 minute fight scene and all this other stuff? And like, they're like, nope, I have no idea what you're talking about. So it's always fun to kind of introduce them to two things, right? Mm-hmm. I imagine you guys are pretty big fans of the movie if it made it onto the record.
huge fans. It's a very, I think, important movie. And yeah, you're right, a lot of people haven't seen it, but it's the commentary in that movie is just great, and especially now, you know, like even more so today.
So
we felt that was like a really important message to us, and we wanted to kind of convey that and kind of take inspiration from the movie and theme a whole song around it. So that's what we did.
Yeah. And then, yeah, actually it's really cool because it leads right into Look Closer, which is, you know, thematically kind of in the same world. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's one, again, that's if I had to pick a favorite, it's hard to pick one, I guess that's probably the one that I go back to the most. Just because it's just a great song, the sing along parts and just the lyrics too are just really still relevant now, you know, with the, you know, the idea of being plugged in and tuning out and all that. Like back then it was happening still, but I guess the rise of social media and other things, of course, it's definitely gotten a lot worse, I guess.
I agree. It's like evolved into this monster.
Yeah. It's like when Facebook was down the other day, I guess there was something going on, like all these, I kept seeing on Twitter people being like, okay, Facebook's down for 5 hours and some people are kind of losing their minds. And it's like, Facebook probably needs to go down forever.
I agree. You can't even delete your freaking info anymore. You know, it's like,
no,
your privacy is gone.
Yeah. Zuckerberg's he's doing some stuff, man. But
he is. He's doing something.
But you know, like I said, that's one of those ones that, again, very fast, a fun song, very upbeat, but then underneath it all, it's extremely, you know, it's very poignant lyrics and it's very important, I think, you know. But then, you know, we got heavy, like we're really getting heavy in the first part of the album, and then we get to Summer Jam, which is just a fun ass song, right? And
yeah,
I've always wanted to know the line with Maloney and the I'm just trying to get my smoothie on, dog. Like I've always wondered where that came from and just, you know, what was that about?
That's probably our wildest tour story. So that song, yeah, like you said, it's kind of the theme of the song is tour stories and just the wild things that we've done on tour. And that was Augusta, Georgia. We had a day off after our show in a mall. We were with fireworks and we walk up to, we're like, let's get smoothies. Baloney loves smoothies. Baloney, for those who don't know, he was our merch guy, and he tour managed fireworks. He grew up with all the fireworks guys. He's just a close friend of ours. And yeah, so we went to this mall, and we go to this smoothie bar, and it's called Raspberry Cool. Okay. And the kids in the smoothie bar recognized us from the show, and they're like, oh my God, you guys are on the tour. Like, here, you can all have smoothies. They gave all of us free smoothies. It was amazing. It's never happened before or since. And we were so excited. We were just acting silly. And we all started chanting Raspberry Cool. And the whole food court is like staring at us doing this. And these two guys run over in these gray suits. And we're like, oh, great. Here comes mall security, you know? And they're like, all huffy and puffy. You guys need to leave right now. And we're like, okay. They're like, you're kicked out of the mall or whatever. So we form a conga line just to kind of like mock them. And we start marching down the stairs. And the last person in line is Baloney. And they grab him and they cuff him. And we're like, wait, what are you doing? And they're like, well, he's coming with us downtown. And we realize then that they're sheriffs. They're not mall security.
Oh, wow.
We're like, oh, this is bad. And we're like, well, we need to know where you're taking him because we need him, you know, we're on tour and we can't just stay here all night. You know, we got to hit the road. And they're like, well, you better leave right now. He's coming with us. And if you don't leave, you're getting arrested too. And one by one, they started just cuffing all of us. And it really escalates out of control really quickly. At this point, the whole food court is staring at us. And one of the officers opens, you know, those doors in the malls that are kind of like painted like the wall, they just blend into the wall.
Yeah.
He opens one of those to a little secret hallway and he starts shoving us down there. And we're like all arguing with him and trying to ask him what's going on and why he's doing this. And you know, he's getting really aggressive with us. He's got like, he wasn't a very big guy. He had like small man syndrome, you know. Oh, yeah. And I can say that because I'm not a big guy either. You know, he definitely had little man complex, Napoleon complex, whatever you want to call it. And he like elbowed me in the back and was like shoving us against the wall. It was really aggressive. Jesus. And the people in the food court at this point are all standing up like, what's going on here? This is not right. And he looks out there, you know, someone yells something at him. And then he just, without hesitation, slams the door shut. So now we're trapped in this hallway and it's a real tense situation. Half of us are out in the food court talking to the other cop. Some of us scattered and got away. and five of us are in this hallway with this cop. And he's just elbowed me in the back. And it was completely unnecessary while I'm cuffed, you know? And so we surround him. We're like, there's this tense, like, Mexican standoff moment where we're like, what do? Do we fuck up this cop? Or do we get arrested? Like, is it going to get us in more trouble? And we're all talking to each other, like, trying to game plan in front of him. And he is just, like, terrified. He's just, like, sitting there, like, holding his, like, gun and just, like, staring at us like he's going to, like, he doesn't know what to do, right? He's surrounded. And as we're figuring all this out, you know, probably 30 seconds passed of just this awkward tension, the other end of the hallway opens and there's a cop car parked on the sidewalk. And this other sheriff is like, bring them down here. And they one by one started throwing us in the squad cars. And as this is happening, I look across the parking lot and I see Baloney running away. Somehow he escaped, even though he was the, you know, he was the beginning of all this trouble. He's just kind of like, he's kind of just snickering as he runs off. So, you know, they take us downtown and we all get checked in and we're just like giggling and like messing around and pissing off all the jail people. And, you know, we take mug shots and the whole nine yards and, you know, we call some of our parents and try to figure out what to do. And basically they're processing us for however many hours. I think we're in there 7 or 8 hours. You know, it's nighttime by now and we get our phone call and all that. And we're talking to the other guys in the band who didn't get arrested. And they're like, yeah, I guess, you know, we got to pay like $375 a person or something like that for bail. And then if we want to stay and get it sorted out, we have to stay till, you know, whatever it is, sometime next week for a wow. trial and yada, yada, yada. Or we can just pay bail and they'll let us go. So we paid the bail and it was basically all our money from the day before. And we got out and we drove straight to the next show and we made it on time, I think, but it was like this whole fiasco. And while we were in the cell, there were these two other kids there and they were like, what are you guys here for? You know, one guy was, there's actually a third guy in there. He was in there for a domestic dispute. I guess his baby mama cut his face open. He had like a big patch on his face. But God. These two kids, they were like, oh yeah. We told them what happened. They're like, no way. We got arrested at that mall too. We live here. And we're like, oh, what's the deal? Like, why'd they arrest us? And they're like, they do this to everyone. They have a quota and they know they're going to get their $350 or $375 a pop for bail. So, you know, we were just sitting in our car listening to music and we got arrested too. It happens all the time here. So nobody really messes with that mall. I was like, oh man, that sucks. So I don't know. After just sitting there bored for a few hours and carving our names on the wall, we finally got out and paid all the bail and we were on our way. But yeah, it's made for a good story.
I was not expecting all the twists and turns.
It's wild, right?
That's
all of our smoothies.
Yeah, no shit. Like, it's, I love in the song, the whole, you know, trying to give a smoothie on dog. Like, I remember for Warped Tour, I think 2010, I was there watching you guys. And that particular part, I was like, I was waiting for it. I was like, ready, right? And I'm thinking, okay, it's going to be a part probably, you know, the band's going to drop out for a minute. The crowd's going to shout it back. It's going to be a whole thing. And I'll never forget it because, I mean, it's been 11 years. I still feel like a fucking idiot. But I screamed so loud. I felt like I was like ripping my fucking vocal cords and not a single person around me said a word. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, I'm just trying to get my smoothie up, dog. It's kind of like trailed off and just crawfished back in the crowd. It's like
awkward turtle.
Yeah. That's one of those things. Like to this day, I still think about that. When I hear the song, it's like, what the fuck was I doing, man? It was not really me. It's like the rest of the crowd's like, come on, guys. Like, that's the part. You know, everybody sing along. Yeah. And it's like,
yeah, it's not you, it's them.
Yeah, they just are all standing around doing this and kind of just looking like, it's like, come on.
Too cool.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That was that particular Warped Tour was such a shit show too. Like, I think it was in Houston and it was raining like literally the whole day. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually shocked it didn't get canceled, but they let it go on and it's like, we actually ended up leaving because it was like starting to flood and shit. Like we had to
go. Oh yeah, so. We had a lot of those.
But
warped.
That was it was funny, like real quick, still about warped. We in 07 in Houston, it rained too bad and they canceled it, or not canceled, but they postponed it the next day and did it inside or whatever. It was like, I would have assumed if any time they would have done that, it would have been for that one too. And they were just like, nah, kids can figure it out. But you know.
Yeah, sometimes they would always let it ride as long as they could until they absolutely had to shut it down. But we saw some shit, man. We saw a lot of floods. It became a thing after a while where, like, if it was a flood day, we probably, you know, assumed it was gonna get shut down. So a lot of bands would just bust out their shower gear and just shower in the rain. It was easier than taking a shuttle to the nearest showers at the hotel or wherever.
Yeah. Warped Tour was super fun, I guess, as a younger person. But now it's like, I couldn't imagine being out in a parking lot in 100 degree heat with no shade for 10 hours. Like,
oh yeah. Imagine doing it every day for a month and a half, you know, as a band. It's like, you really start to question what you're doing with your life.
Yeah. I've definitely heard
it's a horror morale stories. Killer sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
People, that's kind of like, it seems like a lot of bands, like, kind of worst times were with Warped Tour. If they were on it for an extended leg, it tended to always kind of be shitty.
Well, I don't want to say it's all bad, because, you know, as someone who's done it 4 times, I think it was, like, it is the hardest tour you'll ever do. That is true. But the 5 to 10% of the time that it's fun, it's more fun than any other tour.
Yeah.
It is like adult summer camp, and it is awesome. The parties are like, you're raging harder than any party you've ever been to. It is wild. You get all these maniacs all in one place. Like, it's just so much fun.
I can imagine on that side of it would be pretty cool. After the show, you kind of just have a huge, you know, touring party. And like, that's, yeah, like I said, for the 10% of the time, it's perfect.
Right. Just that one to 2 hours at the end of the day, you don't care that you're exhausted and sunburnt and dirty. You just want to freaking go hang out with everyone and scream at the top of your lungs. You're going to lose your voice, but who cares? And it's dusty and, you know, hot still, and there's mosquitoes, but like, you don't even care, because it's just so much fun. It's all your friends in one place a lot of the time, so it's really cool. And, you know, that comes at a price too. You know, there's also a lot of drama because of so many people in one area, and, you know, everyone's hooking up with everyone, and it's you're not allowed to fight or you'll get kicked off the tour. So there's a lot of just kind of like, I don't know, sometimes there can be a lot of nastiness between bands, but for the most part, it's a really good time.
That's pretty awesome. I kind of, in a way, I kind of miss it, because I would like to go back if they ever do it again. But you know, I guess COVID in general has kind of canceled a lot of shit. Nothing's coming back, but it's like, you know, slowly working my way back to be able to start going to shows again, you know.
Yeah, still, I mean, I've been to a few shows since things reopened, and it's still different, you know. It's still not the same. So
yeah,
we'll get there, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah, knock on wood. Hopefully by this time next year we'll be kind of in a better place. Hope so. But
me too.
But moving right along, we went off on a tangent there, a great tangent. I really love that story, by the way, because buddies of mine on the they host a podcast that they only do pop punk and emo from a certain time period. So their shows, it's funny because it's limited in that way. Like, they pick a lot of like obscure shit to talk about from like the 2000s to 2010s. And Tom is one of the hosts. He specifically wanted me to ask you about that story just to get some
insight. Good one. So, yeah, that's a good story.
I'll be sure to let him know that I got his answer for him. So moving along in the album, Like You to Me is next, right? And again, just was curious about the process of how that song came about. Just you know, if you give me a little insight on it, just the meaning or what kind of, where you guys were headspace wise when writing this particular song.
That song is about, I guess, you know, being head over heels for someone and balancing that with life on the road, and hoping that it'll become something more, but kind of also at the same time being unsure of yourself and not knowing the future that lies ahead and making peace with that.
Yeah, that's
sounds a little more personal, you know. And Jordan and I were kind of in similar situations with that at the time, so we both contributed lyrically to that.
Okay. I imagine that gets pretty hard if you do have somebody back home and you're gone, like you said, 10 months out of the year you're touring, you know. That could put a strain on things, I would imagine.
Right. I mean, you know, it's something that every touring musician has to deal with if they're in a relationship. It's very challenging because, you know, you got your partner who thinks that maybe you're not as devoted to them as you feel you are. And, you know, cause you can't give them the time you don't have, you know, you're on the road. You can't physically be there with them. And that's very straining on a lot of relationships. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's just sort of all the emotions that come with that.
Yeah. I guess a small, very small way I can sort of relate with my job. I work 12-hour days typically. And if there's overtime, mm-hmm. sometimes I'm out there for 6, 7, 8 days in a row. And I see, it seems like I wake up and everybody's sleeping. I get home and everybody's going to sleep basically. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm here, but I don't really see anybody, you know, it's kind of not quite the same. I'm physically here, but you know, I can see where that'd be tough, you know?
Right. And you magnify that on a macro scale, you know, instead of hours of the day, it's days or weeks at a time that you're gone, and you come home and it's almost like, you know, everyone's got their lives. They're all wrapped up in work and school, or, you know, their relationships and families, and you know, you don't see your friends as much. And then it's like you put that part of your life, the progress of your life, as you know, society tells you should be moving along upon, it is sort of on pause. And then everyone else is kind of just still moving. So you come home, and after a while, you know, you tour enough, home is just another city. And it's a very weird, alienating kind of thing. I always felt that if they were to do a psychological study on the long-term effects of touring, it would really yield some fascinating results.
I guess I never really thought about it in that respect, but yeah, you can only imagine what they'd come up with, right?
Yeah,
but
it's got to give you some sort of syndrome. I don't know what, but it's probably not good.
So moving on, track 6, we're here with The Fallen. Again, kind of, I guess, kind of take me through that one. I know there's a couple of lines where it's, I like where I think where Jordan says, don't ever talk to me like you think you know me or what I've been through. I'm nothing like you, in that big kind of gang vocal portion. Like, I'm just curious as to, I'm not sure if that was directed towards anybody in you know.
Oh, it particularly? Was.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was like, just kind of in general, you know, or if that's like a very specific, someone who it's about would know that it's about them.
So let me take you all the way back here. In middle school, I was into a lot of kind of metallic hardcore. I was, when did I go straight edge? I don't know, probably maybe freshman year or eighth grade or something. I looked up to a lot of these straight edge bands in the hardcore world. And one of my favorite bands was this band, Morning Again. And for those who are familiar with that band, they know that John Wiley, the owner of Eulogy, was in Morning Again, and that sort of led up to our decision to sign with Eulogy. So I was like, whoa, like, guy from Morning Again's label wants to sign us. That's so cool. And over time, you know, that relationship kind of disintegrated a little bit, and things were so bad at the end there that, you know, like I kind of touched on with This Will Be the Death of Us, we were really unsure of how things were going to turn out for our band because of it. And so once we got bought out of our contract by Epitaph, they funded This Will Be the Death of Us. That was our first record with them. And we wrote these two songs, The Fallen and The Few That Remain, and they're kind of basically one big song, because it's all the same theme, and it's one big message to John. And we wanted it to be very clear that it was. It was just kind of like, no apologies, no reservations. We weren't holding anything back. And so that's why we titled those songs The Fall and The Few That Remain, because Morning Again had a CD, like they had a record called The Fallen, The Few That Remain.
Oh, shit.
Called One The Fallen, the other The Few That Remain.
I was actually going to ask you about that.
That was just kind of like the extra icing on the cake. It was like, all right, now you know it's about you. Checkmate, you know?
I noticed the, because I guess I've always kind of wondered that The Fallen has the three dots, and it's like, oh, it's weird that they put punctuation there. But okay, so it all ties together. It's like a big,
so yeah, kinda... if you look up Morning Again's discography, there's a record called that.
That is a, again, not what I was expecting. I was thinking, you know, sometimes it's kind of a general, like, you know, hey, people kind of doubt it. No, it's like very clear, fuck that guy in particular.
Yeah, we were pissed off. We were like, hey, man, you took advantage of us. Or, you know, that's how we felt about it. You know,
yeah.
They had sold so many records, and we hadn't seen any royalties. We knew our merch was like flying off their web store shelves. We weren't seeing any of that. You know, they were always, quote unquote, recouping everything. And we were friends with everyone at the label, and one person in particular who stood up for us was kind of giving us our inside line on all the information of what was really going on over there behind closed doors.
Wow.
And that was the guy who ran the web store. His name's Anthony Moore. And we just like clicked with him immediately when we met him. He loved our band. We loved him. He was super friendly. Everyone there was really cool to us at first, but then John and Jordan, they started butting heads and it just kept getting worse, snowballing from there. But Anthony would go to their meetings and, you know, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, this and that, you know, we're not going to do this for Set Your Goals, or, you know, they're bashing us or whatever. Anthony would stick up for us until eventually they fired him. And, you know, he's like, dude, you know, these guys are being dishonest with what they're selling on their web store. You know, they're inflating their costs. And so we were like, man, we should audit these guys, you know, when we didn't have any money, just to prove a point, really, not even about the money, just because of it, principle, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, Anthony gets fired. And we're like, no way, they fired you, dude? Like, that's pretty severe. So we're like, screw it, we'll give you a job. So we brought him out as our merch guy. And through that, he met such a large network of people. He started working for bigger and bigger artists. Like, right now, he's currently on tour, basically tour managing, or, you know, second in command. I think he's assistant to the tour manager, but for Rancid. You know, he's done all these huge artists. He's done, he's worked with Dylan Francis, Snoop Dogg, and Chris Cornell, and Henry Rollins.
Damn.
Bass Nectar. Yeah, just every genre, everything. And he's just he's such a likable guy. He's one of the most quality humans I've ever met in my life. I can't say enough good things about him. He's one of my best friends in the world. I love him to death. You know, I saw him 2 nights ago because Rancid came to town. And he's such a good dude that everyone just instantly likes him. So he gets all these awesome offers. And that's not because he's getting, you know, not because people are playing favorites. It's because he's good at what he does too, you know. So
yeah,
he's a smart guy. And he's a hard worker. So yeah, that's Anthony. I forget what the question was at this point, because I went off on a tangent, but
yeah, that answered everything I could have ever asked.
Okay, great.
I did want to ask you that. How was it working with Hayley Williams, of course, has a guest spot on that. And I was actually curious how that came about. Because I guess they were with Fueled by Ramen at the time, correct? Yes. Okay. I guess did somebody know them, or did they kind of just like, hey, we want to get her specifically, or was like a list of people that like, hey, we want to get these people on the record at some point?
So Jordan and I used to go to Newfound Glory shows back before Set Your Goals was even a band. And we kind of struck up a friendship with Chad. He was always like the hardcore guy, and he would let hardcore kids into their shows and stuff. And he'd always really go out of his way to help out hardcore kids. And once we started the band, you know, we told him and we contacted him, and, you know, they took us on tour a bunch of times. And when we were recording that record at Mike Green's, it was across the street from where Chad was living at the time. And so he came over, and he was dating Haley at the time too. So he came over to the studio, and he and Haley would just come hang out while we're recording, you know, eat burritos or go get coffee or whatever. And, you know, that happened a few days during recording. And one of the days we were just like, yo, Haley, you want to do a part on this record? You know, we said to Chad too, you guys want to do parts? Oh, like, yeah, let's do it. So it happened very organically. It was just totally threw the idea out there casually. And she's like, you know, let me talk to my management and make sure, you know, it's cool with the label and everything. And we did it, and it turned out awesome. We wanted to do something a little different for her, you know, like not her typical like pop sensibility kind of singing, maybe have a rap. So
yeah,
we really thought outside of the box a bit. And, you know, some people love it and some people hate it. I think it turned out great, but yeah, I thought it was a cool idea.
I will say I was a big Paramore fan. Like, I think 05, 06 is where I kind of got into them. And when I heard that Hayley Williams had a part on the record, I was like, oh, holy shit, I can't wait to hear it. And then when she busts out with this, like I said, kind of a rap thing, I was like, that's fucking cool shit.
Yeah, she's just great. She's so talented. And sorry, finish your thought. But
yeah, it's just, like I said, some people hate it, some people love it. But it's like, I was always one that was like super taken by that. Because it's like, again, it's way outside of what she normally does, but she does it really well because she's just talented all through and throughout, you know. And so it was really cool to kind of see her or hear her outside of like the Paramore bubble, especially at that time too, because I guess they only had a couple albums out, and we kind of knew we knew about them, and it was like, okay, that's Hayley Williams. But then it's like, oh shit, she can also do that. Like, who knew?
Oh, totally. She's an incredibly talented singer, and you know, everyone in Set Your Goals loves Paramore, like as people and as musicians. I mean, Riot is such a fantastic record. I love that record.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, that's not normally, that genre is not normally my cup of tea, but it's just so well done. We love the production. And that's actually why we had David Bendis mix that record.
Oh, really?
He mixed This Will Be the Death of Us. And it's because he did the Paramore record and we loved the way it sounded so much.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
That, he did Riot.
that is one thing I guess that could be said from Mutiny to this record. The production is, you know, I think a little bit, not say better, but it's definitely different. You can hear that difference on this record. It sounds,
a
hair more polished, but also still has that kind of raw energy, right? Like it's just,
right.
I think they've nailed it for sure, you know.
Yes, and that's no coincidence. You know, when we did Mutiny, we did it with Barrett Jones. It was very bare bones. It was in a studio in a basement of a laundry place or something. And it was very grunge because he's a grunge producer. He did a lot of stuff with, like, you know, Sonny the Real Estate, all the Seattle bands. He did the first Foo Fighters record. He did stuff with Kurt Cobain.
Oh, wow.
So, that whole music scene, he's a really big member of that community. And it was great, but you know, our whole thesis behind that second record was that, you know, we have the punk part down, like the big P little P thing, you know, it's like we've got the punk part down, we need help with the pop, you know. And the first record, you know, we felt like Mutiny came out and we were like, it was received so well, we were like, wow, well, you know, this isn't polished at all. And we did it in like 2 weeks. Like the bar was pretty low for us. So if people like that, just wait till you see what we can do with some real production and a real budget. And that's where we went with This Will Be the Death of Us. We went in twice as prepared. We took more than twice as long. And we had real producers and mixers and real names behind it. And not to say Barrett Jones isn't a real name. He's a big name and he does what he does very well, but just a different vibe.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was more the polished thing.
So again, speaking of the record, moving on to track 8, since you know, now we know that 6 and 7 are very much tied together. Equals, which starts off with a really just kind of, you know, I guess kind of sets the tone for the whole song with the shouting words at a mirror, trying to find the hero. I don't want to let any of you down. I want to assume that's maybe speaking to yourselves, like, hey, we want to do this and we want to, you know, we want to make something that we're proud of and we don't want to, I guess, let ourselves down and in turn let our fans down, right?
Right.
I'm assuming that's kind of where that was born out of, is what I always took away from it, at least.
Yep. That song, I think Jordan kind of, we had songs where we'd kind of appoint ourselves, you know, me and Jordan would appoint ourselves like, okay, Matt's going to take the helm of this one, Jordan's going to take the helm of this one. Jordan was sort of at the helm of that one, and it was about grappling with, you know, we both contribute to all the songs, but usually it's like more one person than the other. And that one was Jordan. It was about grappling with the, I guess, struggle of being human and being seen as someone who's idolized or put on a pedestal, and how uncomfortable that is. And just basically wanted to let the world know, like, hey, I'm human too. I'm not perfect. I have my own struggles and I have my own doubts and fears and anxieties. And, that's really what that song is about.
So I got one right.
Yeah. You nailed it.
Yes. Moving on into, so Gaia Bleeds is actually the first song I heard from this record, and knowing the first album, I was like, this was a stark difference. It was more just heavy as shit.
The outlier, yes.
That was it's definitely like there's like some double bass really hitting hard. There's a lot of screaming like that. This song for me, I was like, man, if this is the direction you're going in, like it's like almost a 180 from what I know from Mutiny, which it turned out it was more of a mix throughout the record, but this one song was very just like kicky in the face sort of, you know. And it again seems to be about just humans being shitty and just kind of just destroying the world, which is what we're doing, right?
Right. That's, to me, I sort of took the helm of that one lyrically, and to me that's always been a really important issue to me. Just the way in which we exist on this planet is so unsustainable, and I, you know, at this point in our band's career, I think four of us. Well, I'm not vegan anymore as of a couple months ago. I was diagnosed with Crohn's. I had to do a complete overhaul of my diet. Now I eat seafood, but which I have issue with. It's a very big point of conflict for me, but that tangent aside, you know, I was vegan for 8 years. Mike, our drummer, is vegan. Jordan's vegan. Joe's vegan. At least last I checked, you know, with all these guys, they were. But yeah, it was kind of like one by one, we all just started going vegan. And this is just kind of a precursor to any of that, really. We were all just sort of like wanted to increase awareness and really wanted to speak out against, I guess, a lot of the evils of humanity and factory farming and the industrial revolution and the military industrial complex. And mm-hmm. just basically, you know, the things that all the corporate entities of our country and other countries, you know, are unleashing upon the world. Like, it's just such a big impact in a negative way, and it's not sustainable. We're not going to survive. We don't really have a choice after a certain point but to change our ways, or we're going to be completely, you know, we're going to suffocate ourselves as a species.
Yeah.
So it was just, yeah, that song is just kind of like a call out against that and a way to vocalize our frustration with it. And you know, like you said, musically it is the outlier of the record. It's the more aggressive song. And we had just done, I mean, one of our first tours we had done with Turmoil, who's like one of my, most of the band pretty much, I think it's one of the few bands that everyone in Set Your Goals loves. Like they're this older metallic hardcore band, and they've always been a huge musical influence on our writing. And you know, it was an honor to have Gula, their singer, do a part in that song. And yeah, like I said, it is the outlier musically. We weren't sure if we should even include it in the record at first. And then, you know, we played it for our manager, we played it for our booking agent, and they're all like, oh, this is like the best song. Are you kidding me? You gotta put it in there. But don't make every song like this. You know, it's not gonna sound like you, kind of like you said. But you know, after that, you know, and the way it was received, we did toy around with the idea of just doing like a heavy EP or something, but you know, we never did. But yeah, I think with that whole record, the theme was kind of like, hey, we want to do what every great record does, where all the songs don't sound the same. Every song has its own kind of flavor, but it's still distinctly you.
Yeah.
You know, it's still Set Your Goals. It's just kind of like, this is the heavy song. This is the soft song. This is the fast song. So we tried to do as much as possible. And I think it really made for a well-rounded record.
Yeah.
You know, you listen to like a Foo Fighters record, like that's what they do. They've got like the country sounding song, and they've got the pop sounding song. So yeah.
One thing I kind of, and I tend to forget this, I guess, of when these albums came out, it was, we were just coming out of the Bush years. You know, there was, I feel like we got a lot of, not necessarily like, well, was some more direct than others, but there was some, a lot of politically charged music at the time that was kind of commenting on that. Rise Against always comes to mind because they really laid it out there.
We were listening to a ton of Rise Against and Strike Anywhere at the time, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, they I remember seeing I think a live performance of State of the Union, and on the record you can pretty much pick out what he's talking about, but he very clearly is like, this is fuck you to George Bush and his fucking war. And I'm like, all right, there it is. Like, I feel like we got a lot of really good music out of that, and you know, with this record too being written very closely after that, or even during, right? Like, it seems like there's some, like this song, and then of course getting into flawed methods of persecution and punishment.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it has a lot to do with that as well, or at least it's somewhat influenced by the Bush administration, which, you know, had its issues to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To go into flawed methods, I mean, that song is about the death penalty. And mm-hmm. I think Jordan watched a documentary about it and was inspired. He's like, I think it was a documentary about people who have wrongly received the death penalty and then posthumously were exonerated of their crimes. It was like, oh, this guy was actually innocent and we killed him. Like, that's so difficult to fathom. You know, it's like, wow, our justice system is just so broken. And it's, you know, it's frustrating to even think about. You know, imagine putting yourself in that person's shoes. I mean, it's just like awful. And just how bad it is. It's really bad. Our justice system's kind of a joke. And then when it is...
Yeah.
When it is, you know, working to the harshest degree, even then it's like, they're doing it wrong. You know, they're getting the wrong guy half the time. So it's like, what do we have to do to change this? So that's what that song's about.
I remember reading or listening to a podcast a few months back where I think a cop in Chicago or something I think that's why Chicago has currently suspended the death penalty, because this one cop was like, hey, by the way, this one guy was innocent, but also there's like probably 100 other people that were innocent, or, you know, like he was maybe fabricating things or whatever. And there's like all these people on death row. So anybody that this particular person arrested or got put away or whatever, all of their sentences are like on hold now because of that. And they're reinvestigating like hundreds of cases because of one guy. So imagine
one dirty cop kind of thing, or whistleblower, yeah, maybe.
If something, no, he was definitely a dirty cop. He was doing some shady shit and getting people locked up for things that, you know, it was trumped up charges and whatever. And it's, if you think about it, you know, this one guy has hundreds of cases tied to him that have to be re-examined and basically redone from the ground up. If there's only, say there's 10 of those guys, now you have 1300 cases. Like, it just, it's insane, right, to think about. Like, and it's just, like I said, it's frustrating.
Yeah. Anytime there's a lot of power consolidated into one person or a group, small group of people, you're going to have that problem, right? Like, at the end of the day, cops and judges, they're all just humans. They're going to be corrupt too. They're not immune to corruption, right? Or dishonesty. So yeah. And there's always going to be motives, and, you know, if there's money involved or who knows, whatever there is.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect system, and it's never going to be, as long as humans are running.
Unfortunately. It's very, very bleak, but I mean, it's true. I mean, I agree 100%, because it's just, we've had a long time to figure it out and we just haven't. Right.
But yeah. Right.
But so that said, so moving into, which I guess a brighter, more, just a really beautiful interlude there. Arrival Notes is very just, I don't know. It's just like, it's almost like a palate cleanser in a way.
Yeah, that's what we wanted. We wanted a breath of fresh air and just kind of like a little reset to the record, like a calm before the storm, you know?
Yeah, because then, of course, our ethos, Legacy to Pass On, comes in, just really kind of throws you right into it. Like, I love the Let's Take It Back, and then just really hits hard, and just like the whole song is super upbeat. And like, that again is one of my favorites. Like, if I had to pick, that might be like my second favorite behind Look Closer, or, you know, depending on the day, it might be number one. But it's definitely awesome. As an album closer, it's perfect. Not to gush too much, but
thank you. that's awesome. Appreciate that.
No problem. They like I said, and there are some bands that, like, you know, you have an album where you listen and it's like the first half is really strong and the latter half is maybe it's okay, and like you feel like you could have closed it out better, or you might, you know, you front load it or you back load it. Your first half's not super great, and the back half of the album is really, really good. And it's like, you know, if you would have interspersed to other songs, you know, I feel like this album, like I think you mentioned earlier, it's paced really well. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's the kind of ebbs and flows really well to this point where it's like, it kind of just goes out on a really high note, you know? Yes. And I guess it is just about y'all's legacy, I guess, whenever you're gone, either from the band or just from life in general, or I guess where did that all kind of come from there?
Well, that song, it's kind of like you said, you know, a lot of records do fall off the second half, and we wanted this one to go out with a bang. And, you know, Jordan loves pop music, he loves big choruses and all that stuff, so we just went hard with that last song. We wanted to like really make it kind of a ballad, like a big, we wanted a big sing-along, we wanted all the crew vocals, we wanted like a cool breakdown, we wanted a cool intro. And, you know, there's a lot of layers to it, but, you know, lyrically, we just wanted it to kind of be our mission statement as a band. And what will we be remembered by? Well, you know, what kind of legacy are we going to pass on when we're gone or whatever? And that's what came with that. Yeah.
Okay, it's it definitely worked out well, because, you know, again, I could gush about it for hours, but it closes out on a perfect note. And then, you know, thus closes out the album, which, from start to finish, and I'm not the only one, of course, but they're definitely a 5 out of 5. It's one of those records that I put on weekly, you know, every other day. It gets heavy rotation still. And, you know, mainly because it's still fresh musically, lyrically, for better or worse, it is still in some aspects relatable, which, you know, you kind of wish some of the things probably shouldn't be relatable anymore, but they definitely are. And I think the legacy of that record and just what you guys have done there is cemented, and it's a very good one. If my opinion means anything.
No, it does. That's amazing. I mean, it's so cool to think back and realize, like, 10 plus years after the fact, you know, I'm doing a podcast about this record. You know, it's cool that it's still significant to someone to such a degree. And that feels good. We worked very hard on that record, you know, and I think of all the things we've recorded, I'm most proud of that record.
That's awesome. So I guess with that, man, is there anything coming up, anything you'd like to plug or anything going on that you'd like the listeners to know out there? Anything that you're involved in right now?
Yeah, I mean, we're all doing music still for the most part in different ways. I mean, Jordan, I believe, is still writing, but I don't think he's really interested in playing shows these days. You know, we do still get offers for tours and stuff, and we'll go through phases where we just don't play shows and then we do again. So we never want to close the door.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know Dan is a guitar teacher. Joe, I believe, is doing a band, but I'm not sure which one's still active or if he's doing a new one. So I don't want to speak on that per se, but I know he's still touring with bands here and there, like teching and stuff. And then Junior works in merchandising for other artists. Mike is very active. He's now drumming in the Story so far. I think it's like a temporary thing for now because Ryan had an injury. I don't know if that's going to be ongoing, but I know he's lining up tours with them. He just finished one and he's got another one coming up. And he's also doing a band called Cold Moon. And, you know, he's done a few other projects here and there, like Realms of Vision and some more kind of like side project type stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I have two. You know, I did a band called Chains for a while. I'm working on a new project that's a little heavier, but I don't know if it'll ever see the light of day. But as far as active bands right now, I'm in a band called Near Dark with some friends from upstate New York. And I think our socials are all Near Dark NY, if you want to look us up. Okay, we just finished recording our second EP and it's being pressed, but you know, because of COVID, I think it's like a year long wait to get vinyl made.
Yeah.
But yeah, our first shows are coming up, I think, next month in New York. So, you know, be on the lookout for some more updates from Near Dark in the near future.
Awesome. That's really cool. I'll be sure to spread the word.
All right.
But again, Matt, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me about this record and, you know, just hanging out. So with that, I guess.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's an honor and a privilege.
No problem. All right, well, take it easy, man.
All right, have a good one.
You too.
All right, so that was my interview with Matt Wilson, once again, of Set Your Goals. And it was a ton of fun. Again, very appreciative that he decided to come on the show and talk about it and give me a lot of insight into the album, a lot of funny stories, as you heard. the Maloney story, I definitely wasn't expecting all of that, which I did mention that, but it was just, it's really funny how that, you know, it started out as something so silly and then just ballooned into this whole crazy thing. But all in all, great guest. And I was, again, super excited to get more insight into one of my favorite records. So I'm hoping you all learned something too and had a good time listening. And yeah, that's it for me this week. Like I said, not a whole lot to say about it. You kind of heard it all there. Next week, again, going back to the regular format, I will be discussing a possible album of the year candidate, which it was the kind of front runner until Turnstile's Glow On came out. So it's going to be a toss up. But Foxing with their excellent newest release, Draw Down the Moon, finally getting an episode out on that one. So yeah, that's it for me this week. Again, you know, you can follow me on the usual Instagram, The Vinyl Podcast, The Vinyl Countdown Podcast, Facebook, same thing, Twitter, Vinyl Podcast 5 is my Twitter handle there. So look me up, you know, follow the show, subscribe, come and talk to me, hang out there. You know, it's just let's have a good time. So with that being said, I am Jeremy Levine, and this has been The Vinyl Countdown, and hope to be in your ears next week, everybody. Thank you. Take care.